up on the latest edition of Serie A Awesome. The league lived up to the podcast's awesome tag this weekend. Just the 41 goals across the match day and some surprises across the board. Milan remained top of the table after their win over Inter. But does this mean they are, in fact, the real deal? We all expected there'd be goals in Napoli's clash with Atalanta, but perhaps not that the majority of them would belong to the Partenope. High praise for Napoli. Incoming! Juve playing Crotone proved to be a lot tougher than them not playing Napoli. And we also talk about a rampant Roma showing and a lackluster Lazio outing too. On the show this week, we have Mina, Nikki, me, Matteo and Janusz Michalik, the former defender and US international and longtime Serie A colour commentator. But we will kick it all off with the usual team and we will start with the Milan derby. Let's get your main takeaways then. And I will begin with you, Mina.
I think my main takeaway about this is I'm not really understanding Inter. They were supposed to be Scudetto favourites for a lot of people, including Nikki, because of the fact that they do have, you know, consistency. They've got Antonio Conte for another season, a good team, squad depth. But I think they're lacking in a tactical identity. Who are they? Are they an attacking side? Are they supposed to be defensive? They're conceding a lot of goals. They don't have balance. They're supposed to be a team that wants to attack at the moment, but their attack isn't good enough. So who are they at this point in time?
The balance is something I definitely want to get into with you a little bit later, Mina, because it's something you've already addressed on this very podcast. You've mentioned it before. As for you, Nikki, what would you take away from this derby?
I can't believe Mina went straight in with the dig, including Nikki. I've never said that the favourites, I said they were my pick. The favourites have always been Juventus.
You've chosen Inter for like 10 years in a row.
That's not true. I chose Napoli last season, which was okay. Also wrong. My main takeaway is about Zlatan. Unsurprisingly, obviously, he scored two goals. He played well. He did what is needed of him. But I'm really into the sort of the nonsense that happened after with this, with the lion picture posted to Instagram with just van hunger as the description. This became one of those classic Zlatan stories. I think because it's such a like grisly image, like the lion's really covered in blood. But I think it's potentially like much more going on beneath the surface of it than we give him credit for sometimes. I think when you look at the fact that Milan have such a young squad this season, we were talking just a week or two ago about the fact they started with an average age of like 22 years old. I think if you had a manager doing something similar, not exactly this because what manager would, but doing something similar of drawing all the attention to himself, making everyone sort of talk about this silly thing that he did. It's classic Mourinho. It's classic, like, everyone look at me and don't focus on these younger players who don't need that pressure right now. The fact is that Zlatan's only played 2 out of 4 games so far for Milan, and Milan are winning anyway, whether he's there or not. But if everyone is talking about him, if everyone is focused on him, I think that really relieves the pressure on some of that squad. And I think that's like an understated, like really good thing he brings to the team right now.
Oh, that's an interesting take, because I did mention we spoke to Janusz earlier and he's got a bit of a different view on that, which we'll hear. But Matteo, you're on the call for this game. What were your main takeaways?
Yeah, my main takeaway is that any overreaction about Inter is, quite frankly, a hot take. Let's look at the facts of this game. Inter had 3 golden chances, a Lukaku header just before the half, Ashraf Hakimi diving header, which just went inches wide, and then a Lukaku chance inside the 6-yard box, which he accidentally hit with his shin and just went wide. 3 golden scoring opportunities. I can't make too much of this Inter side. The 6 COVID cases, 2 of their 3 starting defenders out in Skriniar and Bastoni. You had 2 fullbacks alongside De Vrij, who suddenly had all the pressure of Milan's attack on his shoulders because they're basically playing in 10 men anytime that Kolarov is playing at center back, something that still boggles my mind. So how can I take away something that's, you know, that makes a good clip about Inter when they had these key losses and when they created 3 golden chances? In the end, it's a ball that traveled inches wide of a post. Had one of those got in and it was 2-2, we'd be saying, oh, look at Inter with a personality, with having all this COVID stuff around them and missing such key players, that they are able to take a point from a team that is undefeated since post-lockdown.
Yeah, but we must start with the winner. It was Milan in the Derby della Madonnina. Let's give them the credit here. Let's hear then from Janusz Michalik, who we did speak to earlier. We started by asking if Milan were worthy of their win.
Look, I think it was a good performance, of course. I mean, this is a different Milan. And talk about bias here, Matteo, you and I. I think for years we've been looking at this Milan and wondering what has happened since the glory days. And I mean to say it, even though it's obvious, because it hasn't been good. But this is a different Milan a little bit. I don't think they're absolutely special, but I think Stefano Pioli has found a way to make this team play a little bit quicker, a little bit better through the lines. And you have components on that team who, in my opinion, are getting better, developing. This is still a very young Milan team. So things are looking up. No reason to get ahead of ourselves or Milan supporters in this one, because there are some worries, but I thought it was a very, very good performance, simply because Milan has found Inter's weaknesses.
So just before we do go on to Inter, are Milan where they should be, or are they overachieving with what you've just said there?
Well, I think they are. They're unbeaten 20 games. So, it's hard to say they're overachieving. But I think if you look in building this squad, where they came from, where they are, where they may be going, I think to a degree, I don't think it's an especially deep squad in terms of experience, right? I mean, you look at one or two players go out of this lineup and you worry. I mean, news are that Çalhanoğlu is out for next three games. Obviously, Celtic's coming up, Roma's coming up. It's a significant loss. Just imagine a couple of key components. I don't even want to get to the god yet in Zlatan. But, so there are some worries. But I think you take this. Over the years, I think Stefano Pioli has done a good job, which I wasn't sure if he was the man to lead that, if I'm honest. Give him credit for that, because they're doing well.
Yeah, it seems like Pioli's given the team a real confidence and identity. And maybe some of the naysayers in the first three match days of the season were saying, yeah, Milan have been undefeated since the post-lockdown, but look at who they've beaten. And I never bought that argument, because, Janusz, as we've seen since 2012, Milan have struggled mightily against mid-table sides, against teams at the bottom of the table, teams they should be dominating and beating. They've lost so many points. That's why they haven't gotten to the top four. You don't get into the top four just by beating Juventus and Inter. You can drop those points. Milan were dropping those points, but they were also dropping points against teams that finished the season with less than 30 points overall. So against Inter, and yes, it was a strange match to analyze because of the 6 COVID cases for Inter, the backline, which we'll get into, but Milan got the result. And I thought Ibrahimovic, everything that he's been able to offer Milan on and off the pitch, because his leadership style is maybe a bit unorthodox, we can say that, but he's definitely looking at teammates, giving them the death stare, and you can see the way that they're running. And even when they faced a bit of adversity, when it felt like Inter had all the momentum, Milan seemingly find a way. And this isn't something that we've been able to say for a very long time.
Look, a couple of things. You started with, the smaller sides' inability to beat them. As a player, I can tell you, I think those teams and those players didn't believe that they're good enough. It's not a question that, it's easy to get up for a big team, right? With very little expectations, although I'm sure Milan fans always have expectations. But I think in the past, they sort of, again, smaller sides, because of that slow buildup, as I mentioned, they truly, really didn't believe it and perhaps didn't have that leader, right? Because it's funny with Zlatan, because I'm sure they love to hate him, every one of those players. We've seen it here with the Galaxy, right? I'm trying to analyze them psychologically. I think what started out as a banter on his part, just, on social media, even talking about this thing, turned out to be something that he's starting to believe in to a degree, I think, that he is God, he's this special player. I think it's also what motivates him. It's like, because you got to walk the walk a little bit. So in his case, when you go out there and you're so outrageous and you say these things, imagine you and I, we would never say that, right? You'd be like, oh my God, how can I? I just think he feeds off of that. He does. And I think these players just look around and if you look at his body language, it's horrible. I mean, it really is, even though I love the man. But it's if I'm in that dressing room, there was actually something happened in the end there with Krunic, right? I mean, look, here's a Derby della Madonnina, you win it. And for some reason, I don't know what it was, Krunic, at the end of the game, is not happy with Zlatan. I understand why that happened, because he said something to him, listen, you can't play football, you stay there on the side, I'm the God, type of thing. But normally I would hate that, guys, but I think he's one of the few in the world that can do it, because he walks the walk, doesn't he?
Well, Zlatan's walked the walk every single league that he's been in. No matter where he's gone, he's either scored goals or he's won domestic trophies. But I remember a thing that he said when he was with the LA Galaxy, that he's a Ferrari surrounded by Fiats. He's definitely not surrounded by too many Fiats now with this Milan team. Maybe we can move up to a mid-level luxury car. But it's interesting, Janusz, what you said, because you've been in that locker room and it doesn't seem like every player would react the same to that kind of harsh motivation, right? Some players need a pat on the back. Others maybe respond well to that more aggressive, intimidating, those growls and menacing looks that Zlatan gives his teammates. You're right, though, about his body language. If the right pass doesn't come to him, he looks very disappointed. He'll, throw his hands in the air and just basically in utter disbelief that the player didn't put it millimeter perfect on his foot. But aside from that, I don't want to harp on the guy because his effect as this short-term rental who has finally given Milan an identity and a focal point has been, I think, one of the main reasons, aside from Stefano Pioli and finally a bit of continuity, why Milan are on this amazing run.
Look, absolutely. I mean, I look at Zlatan, it's a turning point, isn't it? It's a momentous time right now because I think as you build this young squad, you sort of need somebody like that. And because he does it so often, I think the players sometimes tune him out just a little bit. I'd rather have him doing that to me every day than somebody, those players that kind of quietly in behind your back say few things that you don't like. And he's always there up front. You know what you're going to get from him. And I think there's a way to almost tune that out a little bit for as long as the success continues. And then let's face it, look where Milan are, an incredible start to the season.
Well, let's talk about where they are and where they could be, because there's a lot of talk about what their ceiling is this season, Janusz, and especially in the league when other contenders this last weekend that are considered to be better than Milan, usually overall, are losing. Why couldn't Milan be a contender? That's my first question about where they can go this season.
Well, look, I think you have to be real. Milan has had these moments, right? So has every other team. If you look at even Atalanta, if you look at Napoli. I mean, if you look at Napoli, their squad in terms of quality and depth, to me, twice as good as Milan, right? But, they've been there before. They haven't done it because of the depth of the squad. So, but it's not impossible. If they're in this sort of position, say in February or March, who knows? But I think the goal is to get to the Champions League. The goal is to build. Look how young this team is. There are still issues. And I think you almost forget about the greatest things. You work on the foundation of the team. For example, you look at Frank Kessié. Look at the difference in him because it's almost as if Bennacer is making him better. By the way, Bennacer, one of my favorite players, a sky is the limit for him. And we've seen that in last game, even though I looked at some notes and people didn't seem to like it. He didn't jump at you, but what he does is incredible. I think Pioli and Bennacer, to some degree, simplified his game. Because, Matteo, remember last few years under many other managers for Milan, you look at Frank Kessié and he was disappointing. And I think he was disappointing because he felt like he needed to be a box-to-box player, which he could do, but I don't think it was right because he was taking the balance of the team, out of whack. And now when he sits there with Bennacer can go forward. I think he plays much simpler. He allows the three or four in front to do a different job, and he's been superb this season. So you have these two protecting the four, which Matteo, I'm interested to see what you have to say because that, to answer your question, Kay, as well, why not? Because defensively things aren't right. And depending where you stand on certain players like Theo Hernandez and Romagnoli, who everybody loves and loved, but I almost wonder whether Romagnoli is still young enough, but not my type in a way. He was good when Milan were bad. You know what I mean? When you're not playing well, you pick this one or two players that are playing relatively well and you say, oh my God, Romagnoli. Look, I'm not sitting here to say that he's a bad player, but he's not my type of central defender. There needs to, between Chiara and him, I'm not 100% sure that I like that part.
I'm surprised you picked on the defense. I mean, they've conceded one goal all season in Serie A. And I think Romagnoli, the biggest problem for him is that it's been a revolving door alongside him. And Janusz, as a defender, you need that pillar next to you that you can build the chemistry with. He's always had a lesser defender next to him. He had Matteo Musacchio, who was super mistake prone. The list goes on and on these last four seasons of the kind of defenders that Romagnoli has had, where he's had to be a leader, except for that one season with Bonucci, which then in the second half of the season, it actually turned out to work pretty well. But I like Romagnoli a lot. I think his distribution, his reading of the game, the defense doesn't seem to be the problem. Teo Hernandez, yes, that's where there is a bit of a weakness, is his defending on the left-hand side. We saw it against Ashraf Hakimi, where he just couldn't handle him. And Hernandez has had this problem against people who want to take him on one-on-one. Sometimes he lunges into challenges, but as good as he is going forward, he still needs to work a lot on his defense. And the thing that surprised me is that with Romagnoli out for the first three matches of the season, they were still doing relatively good with Matteo Gabbia, who has had virtually no experience in Serie A, very young player. And you're right, Benacer and Kessié as the two holding midfielders in front. Kessié, for the first time, I think, not playing in a midfield three. He's actually playing as one of the two holding midfielders, so he stays back a little bit more. Benacer has become one of the best playmakers, regista, as they call them in Italy, those deep-lying playmakers in front of the defense. I'm actually stunned at how good and how quickly Benacer has reached this level, because he really is right now, I think, one of the untouchable players. And I don't know how Sandro Tonali is going to get in this lineup, to be honest.
Incredible player. Benacer is one that I've watched. Even when he plays bad, I like him. It's incredible because there are not many players out there. He sees the game. He smells the game. He gets in the right spots. If you actually watch him for Algeria, he plays a little bit different, gets forward a little bit more. I happened to watch the Algeria game against Mexico, not because I wanted to, because I had to, and, you know, scored a beautiful goal.
Are you Benacer's agent by any chance? Because a lot of free press right here.
Look, I would just love to have him in front of me as a defender. As I said, you're quite right. I know they haven't conceded. Kay asked me, you know, can they win the league? I think that is still questionable, and that's why I mentioned the defensive structure. You know, and Teo, you know, I'm a left back, so I look at Teo and, you know, don't even get me on Kolarov and Perisic on the other, you know, side for Inter, because that was an issue for them, wasn't it?
We will go there. So if they can't win the league, can they win the Europa League? Because Pioli says that is within their ambitions, as well as some renewals for players like Donnarumma, Hakan and Zlatan again.
Look, I always think you can. For as long as you believe it, you're a massive club, that teams all of a sudden maybe just looking over their shoulder just a little bit, right, and saying to themselves, is there something special? And when you're on a roll like this, confidence is everything for every player. They'll tell you that. 20 unbeaten, looking great. It's going to be a good test against Celtic, won't it?
Just really quickly about the Europa League, the biggest question is, do Serie A teams, depending on who they are, take this competition seriously? Because in the past, they didn't take it seriously. They saw it as something that would get in the way of them making top four and ultimately reaching the primary objective, which is the Champions League. We saw Inter start taking it seriously only when they dropped out of the Scudetto race, and because of the post-lockdown that the Europa League was postponed for so long. But if they were in the Scudetto race, I think Inter last season, they wouldn't have made the final. They would have rotated much more heavily. If Milan actually want to go for it and actually field a best starting 11 for it, then I think they have a chance to at least get out of the group stage, which they showed they couldn't do 2 years ago. It was a much different side back then. But it really does depend on where Milan are on the table, because if they are suddenly in the Scudetto race in December and they're fighting for top four, then I don't think they would go as hard into the Europa League, because top four remains this elusive objective that they failed to get into for seven straight seasons.
Final thought then, before we do say goodbye to you and Janusz, whereabouts in the top four then? If it's top four for Milan, can they do second? Is it third? Is it fourth?
They can. Look, it doesn't really matter. Look, it's not going to be easy. You look at Juventus, they'll be back. They have so much quality. Inter, you know, with so many players that they've lost. Let's be clear. I mean, Inter were missing key players, especially on that left-hand side. Bastoni, if he played, and Ashley Young. I don't know if we have those mistakes and those goals. So they can, you know, I'm not going to say second, third. All that matters is that they finish top four, and it changes everything in terms of perspective and going forward for Milan.
Let's focus on the losing side then, Inter. Now, yes, they were missing some key players in this clash, but Mina, you have addressed those balance issues. It's something you've seen again in this game. Let's go into that, shall we?
Yeah, well, I wanted to pick up a little bit on what Matteo was saying from his takeaway on the game. And I do understand that Antonio Conte does have his alibis, and indeed he couldn't make the changes he wanted or play the kind of defense. But I'm not convinced that some of the absences that he did have would have even started this game or necessarily made an impact like he wanted them to. My issue with Conte is that you have to decide. You've got absences. So do you either want to be a hyper-attacking side and just be somebody who's going to be like, listen, we're going to concede 15 goals because look at our back line, so let's try to score more. And in that case, then you have to add something to the midfield that allows to unleash the front two rather than just continuing crosses into Romelu Lukaku and hoping that they find the spaces, because Milan are good defensively. They hadn't conceded up to that point. So you have to make a decision. Are you a side that's looking to achieve balance? In which case, I don't think you did very well when it came to buying the right players for the midfield. I'm not convinced that they have a destroyer that they need. And nor is Antonio Conte somebody who likes to train magic, which is players who are capable of sort of unleashing those forwards with a beautiful pass through balls. Antonio Conte likes to train Antonio Contes, which means that they are the warrior types. So in that sense, then he is a person who wants balance in his sides. And if that's the way that he's trying to go forward, then the midfield lacks quite a bit, in my opinion. And secondly, the style of play with so many vertical points, on the wings, not enough defensive pressure in the middle, means there's absolutely no balance to be achieved. Now, I just want to go back to the point of the fact that he doesn't like to train very, magical players. I am aware of the fact that he did a great job with Pirlo when he was at Juventus, and obviously he trained Hazard at Chelsea. But I think unless you're sort of a world-class talent who can handle all of that on your own, Conte likes players that just follow instructions a lot of the time, which is why I don't feel players like Eriksen are going to get a chance to improve or do something special. I would like Sensi to be played a lot more, because I think really through the middle, they don't have that much going for themselves. It's a lot of play on the wing. And if you manage to stop that on the wing, then I just think it's really a predictable Antonio Conte Inter side.
I think that's a bit harsh. Inter's midfield, when everyone's healthy, should be one of their strengths. And I think Barella is that player that can drive through the lines and can link up the midfield with the attack. I agree that players like Eriksen, who show no emotion depending on the result, he's not really a Conte-type player. That always felt like a bit of an awkward fit. And now we're seeing it come to fruition that it's just not working out. But to me, having the wing play isn't a bad thing. That's why you have Ashraf Hakimi. You can dominate on the wings if you want to with one of the most dynamic wingbacks, who, by the way, got the much better of Theo. That was the clash, right? The two best wingbacks in Serie A. And Hakimi was the much better player. And what we've seen from last season under Conte is that he relies heavily on the two strikers linking up and creating chances for one another, which we saw again. Think of that Lautaro little ball over the top that Lukaku unfortunately hit off of his shin. But even last season, those two created for each other so many times that you don't really need that traditional attacking midfielder. It doesn't fit in Conte's system. He didn't have that really even at Juventus. So to have players that can do the box-to-box work, right, like a Barella, and then you have Sensi and Vidal or Brozovic in the rotation, that's still a very good midfield unit.
Yeah, can you respond to that, and then we'll hear from you, Nikki, because I see that you want to.
I'm being closed out of this conversation.
No, I do think wing play is important, but I also think after a while it becomes quite predictable when you always know the way that Inter play. So I do think you need to have a flexibility of either going through the middle or being able to stretch it out wide. Now, what I think that you had at least last season is a bit more balance, right? So you could attack through the wings, but you're also very strong. So it didn't apply all this pressure on the midfield or on the two strikers to have this perfect game. I think what you have when everything is so going forwards or attack-minded and very direct is it puts a lot of pressure on Lautaro Martinez and Lukaku. And defensively, then you're exposing the centre-backs. There's no balance with having so many vertical points on the wings as well. So I think either make it a nice, healthy balance, have an Ashley Young with Hakimi, for example. I know this wasn't possible for this particular game. And then that way the defense is covered and then you've earned your right to attack and go forward and people can go in and help, like Brozovic. Right now, Brozovic is inundated with doing stuff that he doesn't know how to do. He doesn't know how to stop Çalhanoğlu. He's not very good on a defensive level. He doesn't have a Kante or a Makélélé next to him that would have been able to destroy everything to let him play that game. So I think there's a mismatch in many ways on how this team is going forward. Like I said, you either have a very good attacking left back or right back and one that's a little bit more defensive, the way that sort of you do with an Azpilicueta or somebody who's a lot more going forward like Alonso for Chelsea. Or you have to figure out how to make this all work or press very hard from the front. But right now, I think there's too much pressure on the attack and the defense is very exposed.
Can I talk? Am I in?
You absolutely can, Nikki.
I think this is like a false dichotomy operating between an attacking team and a defensive team, because I think we know exactly what sort of team Antonio Conte's Inter are. They've been this team since he got there. I would argue a lot of his teams are this, which is a team that invites pressure. They like to sit back in banks and then they explode forward. Like, that's the idea. And actually, it's an idea that a lot of teams in Serie A are doing right now. We'll get on to Napoli. I think that's exactly what they did very effectively against Atalanta, actually, is you draw teams onto you using these deep banks. And then your idea is you can unleash at speed. And for that system, I think Hakimi is incredible. And I think Barella is brilliant in the role that he plays in the number 10 behind. I agree with some other things, though, that you were saying, Mina. I think the midfield is packed with players who look the same. I think you've got players who do the same job, and none of them is really like a destroyer that you need to sit alongside, I don't know, about Elena Brozovic. I guess that's the idea of a Vidal, maybe, but Vidal isn't that, and neither is Nainggolan, nor is Sensi. Sensi I love, but he's a box-to-box player. He's not a destroyer. Mm-hmm. You have a lot of players who do the same thing. You have Eriksen, who clearly Conte is not in love with. I mean, that feels a lot like a signing that the board made because they thought it was a nice opportunity, but wasn't really sort of discussed with the manager because he doesn't seem to want him or know how to use him. So I think there's a huge confusion in that area of the pitch for sure.
Let's move on then. We have to. You did mention Napoli, and that was a massive win for them over Atalanta. And Atalanta that we've been praising, rightfully so, every week, but 4-1. Now, I know we expected goals in this game, Nikki, but did we expect it to be as unbalanced as this and the goals, so many of them going in favour of Napoli? Surely, this is huge credit to Gennaro Gattuso.
No, nobody predicted that we'd be 4-0 at half-time, and not like by accident, by the way. Napoli just mauled Atalanta. It wasn't at all representative of what was happening on the pitch. I just touched on it. I think it was a really interesting tactical game from Gattuso. And I think it's worth picking up on it when he does stuff like this, because everyone still, I think, has this idea of Gattuso as just shouty man who gets everyone worked up and try hard. Napoli pressed really aggressively for about the opening 5 minutes. Like the beginning of the game, they came out full pelt and just sort of attacked Atalanta, tried to trap them inside the half, and then they drew back. And I actually went and had a look, and the game they played only in July when they played most recently, when Atalanta beat Napoli 2-0, it was a very similar approach from Napoli, in that they did, that game was almost more like a 4-5-1, like it was really just like two lines in the Napoli half a lot, trying to condense those spaces, give Papu Gomez nowhere to go, make sure that was all really tight and too crammed up. The difference this time was, when Napoli came forward, the options that they've got now that he's got that attack going, working so well together, were extraordinary. Atalanta are prone to overcommitting if you invite them to do so. They've got wing-backs who like to come forward. So that's already like not a bad idea, in my opinion. But when you leave that back three trying to deal with Politano, Lozano, Mertens, Osimhen, none of whom are static. I mean, again, go and look at the heat map if you want to this game, because they are everywhere. All of those players is moving in all directions. The back three was a disaster. And look, there were some advantages for Napoli in that regard. Atalanta had had a lot of players that were on international duty, whereas a lot of the Napoli squad was all stuck in isolation together, so they had a lot of time to prepare it. But I think that tactically it was such a good game for Gattuso. I really, really liked it.
Yeah. And the Atalanta defenders, you have three center backs normally who can get caught flat-footed, right? They're not the quickest. I know we saw Cristiano Romero. By the way, I do not like Cristiano Romero. There's things about his game that he needs to work on, because Gasperini's going to lose his patience with him.
He was shouting at the television.
Yeah, but that was a ridiculous challenge on Dries Mertens. How is that not a card? That really bugged me right there, is that kind of overly aggressive. And there's a difference between being aggressive and then just playing where it's sheer stupidity, where you're risking getting a sent off with these crazy challenges. But let's talk about Napoli, because the three plucky, tricky, quick players behind Osimhen, who is lightning quick. And to be honest, I was stunned with how quickly he grasped the system, changing to a league where there's obviously more competition, but his movement as well and creating space for those three. And finally, finally Chucky Lozano's playing in his best position. We've been begging for this. You get a guy who's a left winger with the Mexican national team, is a left winger at PSV, he's scoring, he's assisting, he's looking like someone who's on brimming on world class. And you're putting him as a right-sided striker or as a right winger where he's more of a crosser than. He's someone who, as we saw against Atalanta, loves that little cut-in, right? He's got the pace where he can create room, and he's got this wonderful right foot where he just loves curling the ball. That's how so many of his goals came. We finally saw him there, but only because Lorenzo Insigne was not available. So it's difficult when you make such a big signing of a position where you're having Insigne, who's obviously your long-term left winger, but it was great to see Lozano back in his best position.
But I also, I just wanted to mention about the fact that, you know, you're, what I like so much about Napoli's forward line is firstly, what I think that one of the reasons why they haven't won the Scudetto or properly really have done something special perhaps since that is they're missing a striker, which they have now. But it's not just any striker. Osimhen and Gazzetta dello Sport was explaining this as well. He just sits there and analyzes each clip sent to him by Gattuso and tries to figure out how he can help the team from a tactical point of view. His tactical intelligence combined with Dries Mertens is essential because he knows how to lead the press. This is something he did when he was at Lille, something that he's bought in. He's a predator. He's super smart. He's an opportunist, but at the same time, he's a guy who really works hard for the team. And I think that's so essential because he ties that all together. Then you have a direct point in Lozano, like we were talking about. And I think what's so great as well is that they have Bakayoko. And this was wonderful for Gattuso because he's got a guy who works well in midfield and he knows when to send that vertical ball forward to unleash. When you have all four at the top working hard from a tactical point of view, knowing how to press, then you can afford to have so many attackers like Lazio have. You have to earn your right to play. This is something that I don't like about Inter and I don't like about Juventus, is that they have so many attacking points, but not necessarily ones that understand what to do from a tactical point of view. But with Napoli, everything seems to be perfect. But again, I don't want to go and be too harsh or sort of condemn Atalanta because they had very little time to prepare for this. They had to throw in Ilicic. And this was a game plan that actually Gattuso said that he wanted to use against Juventus. But of course, they couldn't play that game. So this is something that they've been training. They've been in a bubble. They've been allowed to do this. They're sending clips, individualized training. They had time. And this is something Atalanta didn't do. I'm still not yet sure how this season is going to go out when it comes to those two teams.
I thought that was a really fun thing I noticed this week, picking up on that last thought, Mina, because I was looking at the local sort of press in Bergamo and in Naples, and I went literally like one article after the other. I went from reading a Neapolitan headline where it was like, right, we need to put aside the doing ourselves down. This team is a Scudetto challenger. Like, we should start talking about ourselves as what we are. What's missing from this squad to make it a challenger? Literally, the next thing I read was from Echo di Bergamo, which said, the best thing about this defeat is now everyone will stop talking about us as a Scudetto challenger.
Gasparini will be happy with that one as well, I'm sure. So listen, you just mentioned that game against Juve that didn't happen. That was the easiest 3 points that Juve have got all season. 3 points were not so easy to come by against Crotone, though. That game finished 1-1. Now, the news came in about that Napoli decision by the disciplinary commission. After you'd both hung up your headphones and unplugged your mics last week, we went into it. We won't bother going
back. It all kicked off.
It did all kick off. But in this game against Crotone, we must mention for Juventus, no Ronaldo, no Weston McKennie, obviously with the COVID issues there, no Alexandro, no Matthijs de Ligt. Ramsey was injured. Paulo Dybala not thought to be 100% yet. So it meant that once again, there had to be wholesale changes. So Matteo, you can talk to us about that and we'll see how terrified Mina is this week as well.
Yeah, no, absolutely. It felt like it was chaotic. Players were running at 2,000%. They were getting in each other's way. It seemed a bit awkward at the start with Kulusevski and Chiesa both there, sometimes taking up that same sort of space. And it was, I know he had an assist for Chiesa, but obviously it wasn't a dream debut. I thought he gave the ball away a few too many times. Obviously the red card, which debatable, but obviously that didn't help. The problem I have with Juventus right now, and it's difficult with all the players that you mentioned, but it's the lack of balance and equilibrium in the center of the pitch. This is something that we've seen now for two consecutive games, even though they had a positive result in the Champions League. That midfield too, when it's two playmakers, and there's absolutely no, forget destroyer, there's no real box-to-box presence that can win the ball back and that can intercept the passing lanes. When you have a Bentancur and an Arthur, there's still something missing. And it seems to me almost like a video game formation when you look at it and you say, well, that's too offensive. How's this going to work really in the long run when they're taking on teams that have world-class players in the front line, whether it be in Serie A at the top of the table or in the Champions League, where clearly that's the mission with Cristiano Ronaldo on the team. You only have a certain amount of time. But Pirlo right now, if you have everyone healthy, I think you'd have 100 different lineups in 100 different games because he's still trying to figure out what his best 11 is. And it's been difficult to do when you have Paulo Dybala, who's the reigning Serie A MVP, who's clearly a starter when he's healthy, in my opinion. Where's he going to play? Who are you going to take out? What about Morata now that he's scoring 3 goals in the last 2 games? There's a lot of unanswered questions for Pirlo. And this isn't exactly a team that has the patience coming off 9 consecutive Scudetti. But forget the 10th consecutive Scudetto. It's all about the Champions League. And right now, there's more questions than answers.
Well, that's exactly what you're saying, that he doesn't know what his team is, and that's why he needs to experiment. I'm all good with that. You can lose every game you like, as long as you're showing me that the experiments have a logical and come from a logical point of view. When you're deciding to invest in the development of Portanova, when you have likes of, you know, 2 basically wide players playing on the same wing, which makes absolutely no sense to me. Federico Bernardeschi is rotting on the bench and everyone continues to say, oh, well, I mean, he's a disaster. Yes, let's invest all our money in making sure Portanova becomes the great next sensation while we leave the guy that we spend money on the bench. Nothing makes sense to me about this. You buy Federico Chiesa and you buy Kulusevski, 2 very wide players, and then you play them on the same wing with Danilo. Who's going to defend in all of this? Because Bentancur certainly had no idea what to do on a tactical level. He was running around, sort of, you know, everyone chases the ball. There was no clear instructions going forward. Like you said, people running into the same avenues. And what I don't understand about this Juventus side is it's almost like they're fighting for their lives, which is why there's 2 red cards in 2 consecutive games. I feel like there's this need to show themselves to Pirlo, to get recognized, to be noticed. And unfortunately, I think that this is creating a lot of pressure and not, you know, I expect to see Juventus playing with a sense of calm about them. You know, this is Pirlo, the maestro in charge of them. You feel like there should be some level of confidence. Instead, it's like a bunch of headless chickens that have no idea where to go. I don't like this midfield. It makes no sense to me to constantly, you know, play 2 wide players on one wing, Portanova all of a sudden. Let's give Frabotta a chance. Fine, Frabotta at least makes a little bit more of a sense to me. But to be honest, I feel like the way that they are playing this, you know, what I wanted to know were answers to how would we play without Ronaldo. So let's put Morata up front, flank him with Chiesa and Kulusevski, see what happens if we play Ramsey. Okay, he's not available. We'll play Dybala. Okay, he's not available. Then let's try another midfielder there, Bernardeschi. Let's see what he can do in that role. Let's see and try to experiment with the players that we've invested money in.
Morata is looking right at home, though, you have to say, Nikki, back at Juventus.
Yeah, I want to be a bit mischievous and ask, was Dybala not available? Because he was there. He was on the bench.
Don't even get me started on this.
And there's a whole story rambling about that and whether he was unhappy to have been brought to an away game and not played. I think it's worth mentioning that Juventus were unlucky. You're talking about a team that hit the post, had a goal disallowed that was marginal. You know, I don't have a problem with the disallowing, but it is a very tight call. But it's a bad result against a team that had lost its first 3 games by a combined 10 goals to 2. Morata is a bright point for me so far, for sure. I said, I think I said this when he arrived, like, I really like the fit. I feel like Morata is one of those players who's gone around a bit and has never really been loved anywhere except Turin. And in Turin, he is. Like, they really appreciate him. And I think touching on the Champions League game goes quickly as well. We obviously saw him define that matchup. I think the big question mark around Morata for me is not whether or not he can contribute or whether or not Pirlo knows how to use him, because the evidence so far is that they very much are a nice fit. The question is, can he work with Ronaldo, or is he just an alternative too? Which, hey, that could be fine too. Like, it's good to have alternatives in your squad, especially in a year when we're going to see things get so disrupted by COVID. But I don't know. I don't think we're going to get the answer to that question for a little while.
I've been pleasantly surprised by Morata with his movement right away, his goal scoring, because this is a guy who throughout his career, he's never been a volume goal scorer, right? He's always gotten you 11 to 12 goals. He had 15 at Real Madrid in one season as basically a super sub. And I think Juventus fans have a much better memory of Morata based on the games that he played in rather than his actual goal scoring, because he scored about a goal every 3 to 4 games in Serie A. He wasn't a consistent starter, but you remember all the big games that he showed up in. He scored in big Champions League games down the stretch, big Serie A games. But again, his problem was he wasn't someone who's going to get you that 20 goal a season. That's why he's bounced around. He's never really found a home. I remember our own Sid Lowe of ESPN wrote a great article when Morata joined Chelsea about how nice of a guy he is. And what I gathered from the article, Nikki, was this is someone who needs to be adored by the fans. This is someone who clearly suffers when the fans turn on him at Chelsea. They did turn on him rather quickly, and it never felt like a good fit for him. At Juventus, it's the complete opposite feeling, right? His wife is from Italy. He's happy to move back. The Juventus fans have great memories of him, and it really feels like that is part of the reason why right away he settled in. And I'm just wondering, at 27, he's in his peak. Are we now turning into a new chapter of Morata's career where suddenly he can score many more goals because he has the talent, he has the size, he has a lot of characteristics that point to someone who could become much more of a volume goal scorer. So I wonder if this is the turning point where he suddenly takes that next leap in his career that we've been waiting for, but we haven't necessarily seen.
I mean, there's so many layers to what you've just said. Like, I think that one thing that's always worth keeping in mind, yes, his overall goal scoring record, not so great. But in the Champions League for Juventus, he has about 1 in 2. You sort of referenced some big nights. I mean, I think a game which he didn't score in but was magnificent in was the game away to Bayern Munich, where he came off and Juventus were on course for this incredible result away in Germany. And then they blew it after he came off and lost an extra time. Bear in mind again that Juventus, what do the fans want more than anything? They want that Champions League. So it's not a surprise to me that he's loved. I think he's attached to some beautiful memories for fans for sure. I think he's, you know, he's also, again, I think I said this in the podcast before, like he really appreciated how he was treated as a young player coming to the club, that he was sort of allowed to literally sit at the same table as the stars of the club, which he said wasn't the case in Madrid. So there's a lot of good feeling there. I think it's absolutely also true that we don't, on the whole, allow players to develop and change and mature in their careers. So what you say about could this be the point in his career? Why not? I mean, I think he has lots of skills that are, you know, make him capable of being a better goal scorer than he has been. Time will tell. I don't want to get carried away because he scored against Crotone and he scored against Dynamo Kiev. We'll see how it shakes out. But I think it's certainly not an impossible proposition. I would argue maybe he doesn't need to be a great goal scorer, though, because Ronaldo can be the great goal scorer. If he can be great on the European nights, that's probably enough.
But this is where Ronaldo dominates. I think Ronaldo, I mean, I'm really in love with Morata. I do like that he is such a wonderful vertical point, the perfect player to have an counter-attacking team. And I think he can bring a lot tactically. I remember Allegri used him so well in that game, like you said, in Bayern Munich, because he's the guy who knows how to take a ball. He makes the right runs, like, you know, like he did in the Champions League. But my issue with Morata is I'm not too sure about how good he is at holding the ball up and bringing the others into play. So I do think that there's a lot of talent in that forward line, and the one person you can't move is Ronaldo. But I do hope that the rest are moved, depending on who the opponent is. Sometimes it will be a team that needs, you know, tighter control and tight spaces. Sometimes it will have to be sort of a counter-attacking, very vertical side. And that's where I think Morata is at his best. I still have question marks on whether or not Ronaldo likes to play with him very often, because in Real Madrid, as you remember, he was always the backup. They didn't like to, you know, Ronaldo didn't seem to like to play with him up front. He likes to play with more of a Benzema type of role. So that's my only worry with Morata. But obviously, I'm a huge fan of his. But I do think that at times he offers not enough when it comes to taking the ball and just absorbing the pressure to let others come into play. And that's where I think that he can improve.
So with everything that we've taken into consideration and with everything that we've seen so far, Mina, do you think that Pirlo actually needs a fair few more games to be judged fairly as a coach at this point?
Listen, I know that I come across as being quite dramatic about Juventus, but my question marks are that if you are looking to introduce a lot of changes, that I'm a fan of doing so gradually without destabilizing the team. I think at the moment, it just doesn't really make that much of a sense to me to have Danilo, Chiesa, and Kulusevski all on one wing, large gaps for Crotone to exploit, chucking in Portanova. I understand that you want to give youth a chance, but you know, this is also a team that is challenged and tasked with winning a lot. And a lot of criticism heads that way. And you have a lot of kids at the moment. It's not veteran experience. So you don't want them to be harmed by all this criticism either. I think for players to develop, they need clear tactical instructions. They need gradual progression and slow development. I don't think you could just throw them at the deep end and see how well it all works together and then take sort of your cues from there. I want a little bit more organization. I want to understand the choices a little bit more. I think, you know, winning your first Champions League game is something fine. That's true. And hopefully, you know, he will find the right balance between players that actually want to have the ball and know how to keep it at their feet and ones who are finalizers. Because what he seems to have a lot in his team are players who know how to convert or you know, strike, but perhaps not ones who will know how to control the possession adequately. So, of course, we have to give him time because he merits that for the fact that he is just Andrea Pirlo and the club will support him because that's what they do so well. But I'm going to be honest with you. I'm not that confident at the moment.
Mickey?
Yeah, I mean, he's literally taken charge of four games. That's including the Champions League game because the Napoli one wasn't played. I actually share a lot of Mina's reservations about how things have been so far. I don't know what to make of him as a manager yet. And you can make a strong case that a team like Juventus should not be in the position of having a manager who we know so little about and should have not taken this gamble before he'd spent some time with the under-23s. But you have made that gamble. You have made that decision. So, I mean, what are we talking about? You're not going to, after four games, which haven't been like awful. If you've played four games and lost them all, we might talk about it. But you've played four games, drawn 2-1-2. There's been some good and some bad. I mean, of course you've got to wait longer. Like, I don't think it's realistic to say otherwise.
Better overview would be that, Matteo? A few more games?
Absolutely has to be a few more games. The players that would be coming back, obviously Dybala figures into the best 11. I know he's unhappy now, but when he's fully fit and when he's performing, he's there. I see Nikki shaking her head, but Dybala, he's in every single Juve best 11.
I'm not saying that I don't think he should be in the best 11. I just don't know if he is in Pirlo's first 11. That's my question.
Yeah, and these are the things, as you said, Nikki, that we still don't really know much about Pirlo. It's not like we even had any sort of, you know, reference point in the youth team. People said, oh, it's like Zidane. Zidane took in charge Real Madrid Castilla. Zidane was one of the assistants to Carlo Ancelotti. Pirlo was none of those things. Pirlo came in fresh. He was supposed to join the under-23s, and he never got a game in. So we're learning. It's almost like a trial by error. You're learning as you go along in the season. This isn't exactly the team to do that, though, with.
Exactly that.
And I know that he isn't in your team, Mina. I think the Dybala conversation with Mina has been consistent.
Just complain to Pirlo. You don't need to go to Paratici. You know, I make fun of Bale because he always likes to go to Florentino Perez to complain. And I just think that's not what a man who belongs to a team and loves the team does. He acts like he's Ronaldo and Lionel Messi. And I'm sorry, but one good season certainly doesn't earn you that right. You need to work hard. You need to work for your opportunities. We've paid a lot of money for Chiesa. We've paid a lot of money for other players. So wait your turn. Prove to us that you are a player who can provide with consistency, because as we saw from the Champions League, you also lose the ball a lot. So not exactly my pick all the time.
Time to talk Roma. Roma were brought to you last weekend by the number 5, the number where Fonseca actually ranked in the sexiest Serie A manager poll this season, and also the number of goals that his side scored against Benevento. Now, the reason I want to bring this up, Matteo, you were on the call for this weekend, is that they had to work for that win, yes, but Fonseca said afterwards that he's glad that more Serie A coaches are taking an attacking approach.
Yeah, absolutely. I thought Roma were absolutely breathtaking, Kay, when they went forward. Edin Dzeko, I'm actually really glad he stayed there, because I don't think Roma would have gotten this sort of productivity and playmaking from Ade Kamil. Like, Dzeko is such a great fit. It doesn't matter if he scores goals or not. He comes back to the midfield. His passing range is excellent. And I actually want to praise Paulo Fonseca, because it has been a rocky ride. You think back to the transfer market with Roma and Paulo Fonseca saying that Roma at the time didn't have a sporting director, that he didn't think they got enough replacements for all the wingers that they lost. They lost three wingers, Perotti, Under, and Justin Kluivert, and only really brought in Pedro as a replacement. So for him to work it all out, and also not to be so stubborn where he's like, I'm only going to play my back four. He switched to a three. He switched to whatever he thinks makes his team better. And he's done it as well with some tinkering. We saw Brian Cristante kind of deputize at center back at times this past weekend. I'm really surprised and impressed with the way that Roma just bounced back from that nightmare of the administration error in round one. And I thought that it was one of the most scintillating performances in the final third when they were attacking. I thought Mkhitaryan was brilliant. I thought Dzeko did such a great job. And this Roma right now that Fonseca has, with the inclusions of Pedro, who's fit right in with his smart IQ and tactical nous, I hate that word, but I'll use it here. I think Roma actually could surprise us this season and maybe make a dart for that fourth place.
I've always been a fan of Fonseca. I do like that they're so tactically versatile. And your point about Dzeko, I just feel like if he was at Inter, he'd be amazing. He would add so much to that team. If he was at Juventus, he'd add so much to that team. So I'm so jealous for him. I do have him. But like you said, he just offers so much from a technical and from a leadership point of view. He just ties it all up together. But I like that they know how to play with 4 men at the back, with 3 men at the back, that they can just morph into whatever the opponent requires and what their strengths are. And I think that's the key to them trying to push for a top four place, although I don't know if they'll get there.
I have nothing profound to add to that other than Carlos Perez's goal was something else.
Wow.
The footwork
Messi-esque,
on that goal.
Right? Let's say so ex-Barcelona, good. Left-footed, Messi-esque type of finish. One of the really brilliant goals of the season. Incredible.
It was one of 41 goals this past weekend in the Serie A.
This isn't your grandfather's calcio.
It's not your uncle's.
Boring and defensive.
I don't want to
watch
hear about
the damn
this
game.
Show.
Watch
41 goals. And actually, it was the Monday game that let everybody down because that was 0-0. Now, I must talk about Lazio. It's been an up and down week for them because we saw a much better performance from them in the Champions League. But that tells us, Nikki, that it's those depth issues that we've been talking about, we've been worried about. They were beaten 3-0 by Sampdoria. They didn't have Ciro Immobile. Ciro Immobile was in the squad against Borussia Dortmund back at his old club where it didn't go so well for him, did score here and did help his side to a win in the Champions League. So it does suggest that those depth issues are going to be the problem with Lazio going forwards.
Yeah, I mean, first of all, I know this is the Serie Awesome podcast and that's the Champions League, but I just really felt like a certain degree of happiness for Simone Inzaghi for like everything that's happened in the past year that he sort of got this team to this point and how badly it's gone since the pandemic hit, because it really has been like a completely different team to have got into the Champions League and represented themselves as the best version of Lazio. Like, that's the version of Lazio that in the first half of last season was a genuine title contender. I thought they were really good against Borussia Dortmund. And it's hard even acknowledging that, yes, you're missing Ciro Immobile, who scored, the most goals in Europe last season. It's hard to square that with a team that loses 3-0 to Sampdoria, who, with the greatest respect, it's not a great Sampdoria team. It's a Sampdoria team that I expect to finish in the bottom half of the table.
Inzaghi said it was embarrassing. He said you can lose a match, but not like this. But Mina, you sound as though you're going to give Sampdoria some love here.
No, listen, I thought that Sampdoria had actually entered the season quite poorly because they basically had the same team as last year, but, you know, with problems. But I think that they've added quite a lot of experience and, you know, bringing the likes of Candreva in, for example, I think has really helped them going forward. They do have Quagliarella who's playing these games. I think that, you know, when you look at Martin Torsby, you have the players in midfield. I think that what they did really well was fight and earn their right to go forward. I thought their tactics were so spot on in trying to neutralize every strength that Lazio had. And as much as I think squad depth is an important issue for Lazio, I do think they're an emotional team. Sometimes when the chips are down, they're either really amazing or they can fall apart. And this is something that I've seen from lockdown. You know, they were a side that was that were just thrilling us and thriving. And then all of a sudden there was a lot of pressure and they collapsed under the pressure. You could say they were playing every 3 days. You could say it's the squad pressure. But sometimes it's like, well, now you have to make a difference against Dortmund. They will make a difference. You don't know how they're going to react, but they're a very moody team from an emotional level. So that's the only thing that stops me from thinking they're a side that could really do something special this season.
There's going to be a cheeky little mention for Sassuolo to end this week's show, and deservedly so, Matteo.
Yeah, Sassuolo are the new Atalanta. Atalanta's gone mainstream. All the hipsters are now on board with Sassuolo. I think Roberto De Zerbi has a really interesting background, that he went to Germany to kind of scout Pep Guardiola's Bayern Munich when Pep was in Germany, and just see how he ran the training sessions. And he wants to be like Pep Guardiola. He wants to style the team to mirror the Spaniard. And I mean, that is some high praise as well. Pep Guardiola has said that he is a fan of Sassuolo and De Zerbi in the past. So, I mean, this team to me is one of the can't misses every round.
Well, now that you mentioned Pep Guardiola, I know why I don't like Sassuolo that much.
Oh, from the top drawer.
How dare you?
Nina,
would you like to explain yourself?
The audacity.
He wants to be Pep Guardiola, so he wants to spend a billion and not get past the quarterfinals of the Champions League.
Oh, okay.
No, I'm sorry. I'm
I don't think Deserbi needs that.
But firstly,
we've got a title for our YouTube page. Pep Guardiola's overrated. There it is.
Sassuolo are really fun to watch, don't get me wrong, but I don't think there's much defensive balance, and I think that people are getting carried away. I mean, they've played Cagliari, Bologna, Spezia, and Crotone, and I actually think Crotone was really good against them, so I know that's going to be like wild, but I watched that game because...
Nobody's saying that they're going to win the league. Nobody's saying that Sassuolo is going to win the league. They're not going to finish in the top four. I'm going to say that right now confidently. They're not going to be in the top four.
They should be fighting for salvation.
They're going to be brilliant fun to watch. And I will say this, because I think we've sort of talked about him and people might think it's just like a cult thing. I think Chicho Caputo is playing seriously, seriously good
thank
football.
You. Chicho Tracker, we needed it this week.
Genuinely, intelligent. He scored at the weekend, but he also had, just a really nice piece of hold-up play to set up one of the goals. I think he's playing great. And I think if it wasn't for the fact that Tottenham managed to blow a 3-goal lead inside 10 minutes, Sassuolo coming back from 2 goals down to win in half an hour would have been one of the big headlines of the weekend.
I have the quickest question for both of you. I just want one answer. If Immobile keeps playing the way he has with the Azzurri, does Caputo start over him in the Euros, yes or no?
Caputo starts.
No, Nikki. But I'd go the false nine. That's more than one word.
There we go.
That's a good one, Nikki.
Listen, thanks to everybody for all your comments this week. Thanks for going in depth on more teams this week than we have, I think, on Serie Awesome this season. Just quickly, Matteo, what are your calls this weekend on ESPN?
Oh, we have the Atalanta game, 9 a.m. Eastern on Saturday, to see if they can bounce back after that defeat to Napoli. Oh,
okay. Well, that will do it for the latest edition of Serie Awesome. From Matteo, from Nikki, from me, and from Mina, the Sassuolo hater. Ciao for now.